Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we go now from Living Forever to Why Does the Universe Exist? Jim Holt, an essayist and contributor to The New Yorker and The New York Times, asks this question in his new book, Why Does the World Exist? An Existential Detective Story. Jim Holt, thanks for coming back on WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So this question, why does the world exist? Getting an answer to it won't feed anyone. It won't provide anyone with health insurance. Why do we care about it? What drew you to write a whole book about it?
I think we care about it because it's the most awesome and sublime mystery of all, the fact that there should be a universe. And I think astonishment in the face of existence is, you know, really behind the religious impulse. William James called this the darkest question in all of philosophy. The philosopher Wittgenstein said it's not how the things are that's the mystical, it's that the world exists at all. And also, recently, this has become a bone of contention in the so-called God Wars, when in the debate between the neo-atheists like Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and their religious opponents, the religious people say, if you don't accept that there's a God, how can you explain why the universe exists at all? And so the usual answer, I mean, Christopher Hitchens used to get this a lot, and he said, I don't really have a good answer to this. It just seems to be a brute fact that there is a universe. And I thought, you know, we ought to be able to do better. There should be other possibilities besides God made the universe, or science, or the universe is a quantum fluctuation out of nothingness. So, I thought this is worth looking into.
But it jumped right out at me that you weren't asking how, like Big Bang or God snapped his fingers or whatever. You're asking why. And why is there something, namely the universe, rather than nothing? So should you say what counts as something and what do you mean by nothing?
What do I mean by nothing? That is a deep and vexed question, just contemplating absolute nothingness. A lot of thinkers, physicists and philosophers have said absolute nothingness is impossible. I mean, just try to think, to form a conception of absolute nothing. You get rid of all the stars and all the galaxies, all the atoms, all life. Then you've still got space and time. How do you make space and time go away?
If we accept that it all began with the Big Bang, then what came before that? What was in the 10 minutes prior to that? But there was no time. But that's an inconceivable concept.
Right. Well, now actually the thinking is in physics that the Big Bang was not a unique event. It was a local occurrence in this eternal inflating multiverse. So even though our universe is finite in time, it goes back to 13.7 billion years. It's the current best estimate to the Big Bang. The Big Bang was probably an event in this vast, perhaps infinite, eternal, inflating multiverse. So the question of how it all started may not be an important one, because it may be that the universe is eternal. But even if it is eternal, it still demands an explanation. If you know that, if God is eternal, I think, God demands an explanation. And just to, to move to the God side of the equation for a second, I remember I was talking to a quite brilliant philosopher of theology at Oxford. And he said, the explanation for the universe the simplest hypothesis is that God made it. And I said, well, what about God? What explains his existence? And he said, that's just a brute fact. And I thought, could even God wonder, why do I exist? I've existed from all eternity, but why? I didn't bring myself into existence.
So have you answered for yourself why you exist?
Why I exist?
Well, as
the world. Actually, that's an interesting question. One, the cosmic question is, why does the universe exist? The microcosmic question is, why do I exist? And when you think of all the possible humans that might have existed, genetically there are something like 10 to the 99th power possible humans. And how many humans have actually existed? Well, about 40 billion from the beginning of the species. So each of us, we're fantastically lucky in winning this cosmic lottery and coming into existence when you think about all the other possible people who are just, virtual ghosts. And there should be some relationship. If we had a better understanding of why the universe exists, maybe the understanding might yield some sort of cosmic purpose, and we could see our own existence as somehow serving that purpose. And so this was sort of the existentialist side of the quest. I wasn't interested in a purely scientific take on existence. I thought you know, for each of us, you know, the some of the, you know, the crucial issue is coming into existence, and then of course winking into out into non-existence, dying. So death, you know, is our own personal confrontation with nothingness. So I try to wrap all of this into one big, messy package.
And we can do this in about 8 minutes, right? No, I'm kidding. Listeners, if you want to contribute to this conversation or ask a question of Jim Holt, you can call us up, 212-433-WNYC. His book has the small little title of Why Does the World Exist? An Existential Detective Story, 212-433-WNYC. And, of course, science has let us trace the evolution of the universe back to the Big Bang or a Big Bang, and physicists keep striving to push their explanations further and further. As I'm sure you know, the world was recently abuzz with news of the discovery or probable discovery of the Higgs boson, a fundamental particle sometimes called the God particle that gives all other particles mass. Would your book have been different if you started it today in light of this discovery?
Actually, the discovery of the Higgs boson was a welcome development for me, because the conclusion I come to at the end of the book is that the most general form reality must take is a form of infinite mediocrity and messiness. Now, what is the Higgs boson? The Higgs boson is a particle that corresponds to the Higgs field. And the Higgs field, as you say, gives some particles mass and leaves others massless. So the Higgs field is something that makes the world, it breaks symmetries. It makes the world more complicated than it would otherwise be. And so, this is very much consonant with my view of reality. And by the way, this is, when I say my view of reality, I'm sounding rather grandiloquent. This isn't my view. This is what I've extracted from some of the great thinkers that I talked to in writing this book, and particularly the great Oxford philosopher Derek Parfit. And it was Parfit whom I spoke to after I had talked to the physicists, I talked to other philosophers, I talked to Buddhists and mystics.
This is the detective story.
Yeah. So I wanted to have a good list of suspects. I even talked to John Updike shortly before he died. And it's interesting. Updike was fascinated with the question of the miracle of existence, and was a deeply religious man. But he wrote an entire novel called Roger's Version, which is really about the question, why is there something rather than nothing? And it's one of Updike's best novels. But as I was saying, Derek Parfit has thought the most rarefied and advanced thoughts on this. And from his view, the conclusion seemed to be that reality is infinitely messy. It's infinitely mediocre. And that actually corresponds pretty closely to my own experience of reality, I'm afraid to say.
And despite all you've been saying, there is one eminent philosopher you met who insists that there is no reason to be astonished, puzzled, awed, or mystified by the existence of the world. Who was that?
His name was Adolf Grünbaum. He's about 90 years old. He's a very eminent philosopher of science from Germany, and he is the most staunch atheist I've ever met. He really hates religion, and he thinks that this whole mystery mongering over the existence of the universe is just a leftover attitude from Judeo-Christian thinking, and he wants to see the whole thing go away because, it's the last bastion for religious believers to say, aha, but science can explain everything about the universe, but it can't explain why the universe exists at all. And he says, what should be astonishing about existence?
But you can be a devout atheist and still be awed by the beauty of the fact that there are trees or the existence of human sight.
Yeah, very much so. It's a sort of, I think, awe in the face of existence, astonishment that there's a universe rather than nothing at all is probably the purest religious impulse that we all have, and it's shared by atheists and believers, I suppose.
John in Richfield Park, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I actually heard an interview with you on a different program, and while I was listening to it, popped in my head that the reason for everything is purely can be reduced to the desire. Not just people, but or reaching for God, but even our understanding of physics stems from chemistry. And atomic physics is about a bunch of the particles which we think we see or see evidence of that are attracted to each other and trying to pull each other toward each other. And I could go on, but that's, for me, that seems to be the essence of it. Practically, everything I can think about goes back to that.
That's very interesting because you're, deliberately or not, you're echoing the philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer, who said that the essence of reality is will, and that all of the physical matter and consciousness, it's all about a basic striving or will. And that sounds like a fairly daft idea. Actually, it didn't sound daft the way you put it. But when I first encountered that idea in Schopenhauer, I thought, that's crazy. But if you read The World is Will and Representation, one of the great classics in the history of philosophy by Schopenhauer, he actually makes the point of view you're defending quite plausible.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Ulysses in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I guess my question is sort of a philosophical one about the question is really, isn't it more likely that there are multiple universes, and isn't that sort of more of an astonishing question? It seems that human experience is ripe with us, kind of thinking that we're dealing with one thing, and then it turns out there to be multiple, the one planet, and then we find out that it's just one planet in a whole solar system. One solar system, we find out there's many in the galaxy, many galaxies, and now we're looking at sort of what we think is one universe, but isn't it more likely that, when we sort of grow up, we'll realize that there are multiple universes?
Ah.
I wonder if the book touches on the concept of multiple universes.
It certainly does.
Yeah, very much so, yes. And your general point is very well taken. Reality always surprises us. It turns out to be much bigger than we thought. If you go back to the year 1900, not much more than 100 years ago, people thought that the entirety of existence was just the Milky Way sitting in this sort of big empty space. And there were these little fuzzy things that were called nebulae. And it turned out, lo and behold, some of those things were actually other galaxies. And as you're quite right now, the current thinking is that there is this multiverse. In a sense, it's all one physical reality because our universe is separated from other universes in the multiverse by space, which is expanding faster than the speed of light. So you can never get from one universe in the multiverse to the other. But it's still one big cosmic ensemble.
And it's still unknowable. And throughout the book, and we'll end with this, with all the distinguished thinkers that you talk to, with all the potential answers that you look at about why the world exists, you keep running up against this wall that seems to have to do with the very nature of explanation. So we can offer some explanation for why the world exists, but then we can always turn around and ask why about that very explanation. There seems to be no stopping point. So what kind of answer do you think we'll ever be able to get to your title question?
There actually is a stopping point. And the stopping point is when logic doesn't allow any more possibilities. And I arrived at that stopping point at the end, basically through Derek Parfit's insights. And the two principles that bring you to that stopping point are the principle of simplicity, which is one of the bedrock principles of science. You always reach for the simplest hypothesis, and the principle of fullness, which is a philosophical idea that goes back to Plato. And that plus logic gives you a unique description of the most general form that reality will take. And I'm not going to tell you that now because I think we're out of time.
Gosh, you mean,
thank goodness.
We almost got the end of the story and the clock's going to nix it for us?
Yeah, well, the logic is a little complicated. It takes about a page and a half of deductions that never convince anyone, by the way.
So if you want to know the answer, Jim Holt's book is Why Does the World Exist? An Existential Detective Story. Thank you very much. Great conversation.
Thank you.